I'm Cyndi Lauper. My psoriasis was all over, even on my scalp, which may mean four times the risk for psoriatic arthritis. But Cosentyx works on both.
Cosentyx secukinumab is prescribed for adults with moderate to severe plaque psoriasis 300 milligram dose and adults with active psoriatic arthritis 150 milligram dose. Don't use if you're allergic to Cosentyx. Before starting, get checked for TB. Serious allergic reactions, severe skin reactions that look like eczema, and an increased risk of infections, some fatal, have occurred. Cosentyx may lower ability to fight infections, so tell your doctor if you have an infection or symptoms like fevers, sweats, chills, muscle aches, or cough, had a vaccine or plan to, or if IBD symptoms develop or worsen. Learn more at Cosentyx.com or 1-844-COSENTYX. Ask your doctor about Cosentyx.
I won't let my active psoriatic arthritis joint symptoms define me.
Emerge as you. Tremfya guselkumab is proven to significantly reduce joint pain, stiffness, and swelling in adults with active psoriatic arthritis. Some patients even reported less fatigue as assessed by survey 1 week prior. Results may vary. Tremfya is taken by injection 6 times a year after 2 starter doses at week 0 and 4.
Serious allergic reactions may occur. Tremfya may increase your risk of infections and lower your ability to fight them. Before treatment, your doctor should check you for infections and tuberculosis. Tell your doctor if you have an infection or symptoms of infection, including fever, sweats, chills, muscle aches, or cough. Tell your doctor if you had a vaccine or plan to.
Emerge as you. Learn more about Tremfya, including important safety information, at Tremfya.com or call 1-877-578-3527. See our ad in Food & Wine magazine. For patients prescribed Tremfya, cost support may be available.
Hello and welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to episode 20 of the Crick Picks podcast, in which I, Behram Kazi, who you can find at Def Mango, Estelle Vasudevan, who you can find at Estelle underscore Vasude, the number one, and Jared Kimber, who you can find literally everywhere. What we do in this show is that we take any random cricket category and we pick our top five for it, or draft our top five for it via a snake style draft. So what that means is that the order goes 1, 2, 3, 3, 2, 1. And Jared will be starting today. And the topic is, a very, very important and exciting one. Test all-rounders, or all-time test all-rounders in history. So take it away, Jared.
Oh, I wasn't ready for this emotionally. I don't think there's much between the top three. I am going to go Garfield Sobers because I think he is obviously one of the greatest batters he's ever lived. Probably a top 10 batter of all time. I think he was probably like a great swing bowler, as in a bowling average, or a very good swing bowler, bowling average around 27, 28 is my guess. But he also bowled left arm finger spin, and he also bowled left arm wrist spin. And people who saw him field, especially when he was younger, say that he was worth two fielders as well. So while I like all the other players, and I feel a little bit, there's a particular player that I kind of want to slip into number one. I think Garfield Sobers is the greatest all-rounder that we have ever had in cricket. And I'm not sure I'm going to get a lot of pushback. This is not a rogue choice. I think this is a fairly safe one.
I think this is the obvious one. He averages nearly 58 with the bat as well. And the bowling average goes up to 34, but that's exactly because, as you mentioned, he bowled left-arm wrist spin and slow left-arm orthodox, right?
Well, the most important thing from him from an all-rounder point of view is, you're right, so batting is fine. We're all happy with that. He opened the bowling. Mm. Like, if you look, there's some other guys on this list who are absolutely fantastic. They were fourth or fifth bowling choices or third bowling choices. He was there with the new ball as their, you know, second or third best choice all the time. And also he bowled something like 37 overs per game, which imagine if you had an all-rounder now, you wouldn't even allow them to do that, right? But he was such a brilliant athlete that they were just like, oh, he'll be fine. And I suppose they were right.
Unless you're Joe Root, then you would allow him to do that, right?
Joe Root did it for 2 games and couldn't move his fingers again, right? Yeah. Like Sobers was doing it every game.
Yeah. Sobers also has 235 wickets in 93 tests plus 8,000 runs. And he had the highest score in test cricket up until Brian Lara broke it in 94, right? So what was it, 365?
Yeah, so he made 365. There was there's also the great double 100, which doesn't count in his test record, against the for the World 11 against Australia, which some people said was even better innings. He was a natural entertainer, you know, a brilliant player. Like, you know, there's so many great stories about him. He was someone who just wanted to play cricket and get paid for it, which in that era was not like all that confident. Like he said he would have gone to South Africa if people wouldn't have moaned about it. Like he wasn't a political person at all. There's that great story when he's on the BBC and the BBC are complaining about the fact that Mike Gatting was caught having an affair. And he said, I was up until 6 a.m. every morning with prostitutes. It never affected my cricket. Like Sobers was a different dude, right? Just an athlete on a completely different level. And you know, we are going to see some really good athletes in this. I don't know if cricket's had many better athletes than Gary Sobers. And six sixes in and over in a county game, all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, true. He was a trailblazer in that regard as well. Okay, my turn. And this is not going to be surprising at all. And I don't even care if I get any flack for it on the show, because even if I got first pick, I was going to go for Imran Khan.
And,
sure, the batting average is 37.7 and the bowling average is 22.8 in 88 tests. But for a decade in the middle over there, 1981 to 1991, Imran Khan averaged more than 54 with the bat and he averaged less than 20 with the ball, which is probably the biggest peak we've ever seen in Test cricket, or at least close to the biggest peak we've ever seen in Test cricket. Add 362 wickets to that and nearly 4,000 runs. He was someone who changed the landscape of Pakistan cricket. He taught reverse swing to Wasim and Waqar. He had such a big impact overall. I mean, he went on to become prime minister, and right now you can't even say his name out loud. That's where we're at with Imran Khan in life. But the long hair, everyone started copying it, and just such a charismatic guy. I think his impact on not just Pakistan cricket, but cricket overall transcended cricket itself. Like, it was that big.
Well, I mean, he was a sex symbol in Australia and England, right? In two countries that weren't particularly fond of people with darker color skin in that era, right? Like Australia had just come out of the White Australia policy and like loved Imran Khan. And clearly, you know, he has a special place in English culture as well. That's a hell of an all-rounder at that point. He was the only one I think you could make an argument for over Sobers. I still think Sobers was great from beginning to end. And Sobers did more than Imran Khan. Like, you're right with that 50 average and that 20 bowling. And I use that stat all the time. In fact, I think it was either me or Usman who popularized the use of that stat, especially when he got into politics and people started slagging off his career. And it's like, no, you guys don't understand. And when you talk about that peak, for a decade, he had the numbers of a great batter and the numbers of a great bowler. And was he a great batter? No, he was a not out merchant, right? But that's a hell of a player to have. If you got a guy who he made between 30 and 70, like almost every time he went out to bat. And there are lots of not outs in that as well. So he was like what Dan Vittori was, but like the peak version of Dan Vittori with his batting. And with his bowling, you know, at his best, he was almost a combination between Imran, between Waqar and Wasim. You know, he was a really intelligent player. He was really fast, reverse swing and everything. You watch some of those early series in the 1980s and you're like, well, how the hell is anyone ever supposed to stay in against this guy?
Yeah.
I think there's an argument to be made. The issue is how you square off that first decade when he wasn't particularly good, right?
Yeah.
You know, that first decade when he is just an average player, you know, how do you work that out? And I think that's where probably Sobers and maybe one or two others have a slight head start over him. But I think you can make an argument that Imran Khan was the best all-rounder of all time. And it's not a silly argument. You might still come out with Sobers on top ahead of him, but I think the conversation is there. So usually we would make fun of you for picking a Pakistani, but when I said I have one other player I could have gone with number one with, I was thinking Imran Khan.
Yeah, plus you can factor in his captaincy. He led Pakistan to test a test series victory in England for the first time, I believe, in India as well. And he also kind of, you know, spurred on the next generation of Pakistan cricketers and kind of changed the mentality. Plus, averaged great with both bat and ball as captain. So he brought out the best in himself as captain as well. So yeah, I'm fairly comfortable with that pick. And now we shall go on to Estelle.
Yeah, I think a lot of people would have kind of picked him in the top three anyway, Jack Cullis. Difficult to argue with the guy who has 45 hundreds and could still like give you some really good fast bowling, right? Just the impact he had, like the other two we mentioned before, they are two players in one, right? They give you that massive advantage when you come up against, when you have them in your side, because they can give you a full quota of overs and they can also, you know, get some serious runs for you back in the top order even. So I think, I again, like the first two picks, I don't think it's absolutely a controversial one to go with Cullis.
Bayram, how far were you? How far away from you to Cullis?
I was going to go for Cullis if I had him available next up. Yeah, but 13,000 plus runs and 292 wickets. This guy averaged 55 in Test cricket, for crying out loud. And I remember there was this graphic when Cullis was playing his last series versus India, in which they were showing that his average is more than Sachin. And his batting average, by the way, is more than Sachin. And his bowling average is better than Zaheer Khan. He was at 32.65. So that was a ridiculous statistic back in the day. And I was watching that live and can never, ever forget that.
Yeah, I think the big difference with Cullis is, I think if he had played in that 1950s, 1960s, or even 70s or 80s era, it's possible he's better than Sobers or Imran. And by that, I mean, I think he would have bowled a lot more overs. And if he bowled a lot more overs, I think that jumps him up. But he was a fifth bowler, right? Like, he was a fourth bowler sometimes, but he was quite often a fifth bowler. And that was on purpose, right? They were trying to get as much out of him as possible. And if you look at him compared, he's obviously a freak athlete, but he's not the same kind of freak athlete that Sobers and Imran were, right?
Yeah, but like, also, you know, no one in my list has played 166 test matches, which Cullis has. So longevity is definitely an element.
Yeah, but Imran Khan has the longest career of any seam bowler outside of Jimmy Anderson. So Imran Khan, if Pakistan had played test matches in the 70s, Imran Khan would have had 220 of them. So and Sobers has a pretty long career as well. But what I mean by that is that I think with Sobers or with Imran, you're probably pretty confident of working them into the grounds, because they're such, they're just different level athletes. And I think with Cullis, you had to be a little bit more careful. On top of that, out of the three of these players, Cullis is probably the one who had to be persuaded to use both of his skills at times, right? Mm. I think he liked bowling, but, you know, there's that great story in county cricket where, you know, he was bowling little medium paces and someone hits him in the head and comes out and he bowls 90 miles an hour and kills everyone, right? And everyone has seen Cullis bowl where it's like, quite clearly does not want to bowl. He's going to bowl four overs of outswingers, 2 meters wide of off stump. He's going to go none for eight in these four overs. And then he's going to be like, well, that's me done. I'll see you guys later if you need me. That, compare that to Sobers or to Imran and the kind of loads that they put on themselves. Like, Imran didn't have to put himself up the batting order, right? But he was just like, no, I'm going to. So that, I think you have to factor that in. And I think when we go to the overs per game, Cullis, I want to say, bowled around 22 overs per game. Sobers was at 37. So you do understand the difference. Some of that, of course, is late career Cullis, when they didn't want to bowl him all that much and everything else. But I think, again, for me, he's probably just a hair behind the top two guys. But if you really wanted to look at, as you said, the amount of test matches he played, and also the fact he had to bat on South African wickets and still average all those runs. The other two had West Indian wickets and Pakistani wickets. I'll tell you which ones I'd prefer to bat on. I do think you can make maybe a punches argument that he's the best all-rounder of all time. But I think you probably still come out with Sobers or Imran. But if you're a modern fan, that will blow your mind because we've seen what Cullis can do right in front of our eyes, right? So, I look, we've got the top three here. I think we've probably got the right order, but I can see other people might not think that.
I mean, you can make a solid case that he is the greatest batting all-rounder of all time. I think we can all kind of sort of agree on that.
I'm just looking at my list. Yeah, yes.
Sobers?
I think Sobers might still be a better bat than him.
Yeah, but Cullis was playing in an era where cricket had evolved and you had other things to cope with, like reverse swing was around, the dusra was around, surfaces had changed.
Yeah, you know? But if you do that, then you also have to say that Sobers had to handle the fact that there was uncovered pitches. Hmm. So you have to go back with that. And then also, Sobers' job, like Cullis, the one good thing about Cullis' batting from his mental point of view was they just said to him, just bat your way. Like, there's that famous innings where they're like none for 400 against Bangladesh and they lose a wicket and he comes out and he makes 40 off 120 balls. Sobers was attacking. So if you put in strike rate and the fear factor on all that, I think there is a very big difference. So I'm doing the list of the top 50 batters at the moment. I can't remember where Callis is, but I do think we have Sobers slightly higher than him, or at least in the same area. But you're right. I'm just looking. I don't think there's anyone else close to those two in the great, you know, in the all-rounder list, unless you would look at, and he probably won't make this list, although Estelle is on this podcast, so you never know, unless Steve Waugh makes the list. And Steve Waugh's bowling obviously just fell apart by the end of his career.
Yeah, fair enough. I mean, I think when I, Callis the batter, when I think of him, I think of perseverance, and he was good versus pace and spin. And there are a few spells over there which got him, like the Flintoff one. But he was like world class. And in his era, he was amongst the top five or three batters in the world in at that point.
Almost consistently as well, which I think is an important point.
Mm-hmm. All right, Estelle.
This is when she picked Steve Waugh.
Okay, that's me again, right? Oh no, but I
Dhananjaya De Silva. If it's not Dhananjaya De Silva, what are we even doing here?
DDS.
Dhananjaya Surya. Okay, so, there aren't that many. Aravinda. Jared, you never saw his best bowling.
You guys make fun of me. Obviously, but I'm not the biased.
But that makes it even more fun.
I'm intentionally biased in this one. I like to light the world on fire.
Cricket 8 brings you this show. They are analysing every part of our game. Head over for their watch-alongs, podcasts and articles on what is really happening on the field and why it matters. Cricket8.com is your place for cricket intelligence.
Hi, I'm Cyndi Lauper. My scalp was covered with psoriasis, which could lead to psoriatic arthritis, but Cosentyx treats both.
Cosentyx secukinumab is prescribed for adults with moderate to severe plaque psoriasis 300 mg dose and adults with active psoriatic arthritis 150 mg dose. Don't use if you're allergic to Cosentyx. Before starting, get checked for TB. Serious allergic reactions, severe skin reactions that look like eczema, and an increased risk of infections, some fatal, have occurred. Cosentyx may lower ability to fight infections, so tell your doctor if you have an infection or symptoms like fevers, sweats, chills, muscle aches, or cough, had a vaccine or plan to, or if IBD symptoms develop or worsen. Learn more at Cosentyx.com or 1-844-COSENTYX.
Cosentyx works for me.
Ask your doctor about Cosentyx.
I won't let my active psoriatic arthritis joint symptoms define me.
Emerge as you. Tremfya, guselkumab, is proven to significantly reduce joint pain, stiffness, and swelling in adults with active psoriatic arthritis. Some patients even reported less fatigue, as assessed by survey 1 week prior. Results may vary. Tremfya is taken by injection 6 times a year after 2 starter doses at week 0 and 4.
Serious allergic reactions may occur. Tremfya may increase your risk of infections and lower your ability to fight them. Before treatment, your doctor should check you for infections and tuberculosis. Tell your doctor if you have an infection or symptoms of infection, including fever, sweats, chills, muscle aches, or cough. Tell your doctor if you had a vaccine or plan to.
Emerge as you. Learn more about Tremfya, including important safety information, at Tremfya.com or call 1-877-578-3527. See our ad in Food & Wine magazine. For patients prescribed Tremfya, cost support may be available.
Okay, so my second pick, I'm going to go with Richard Hadley. So I think if you compare the three we've named before, he's probably a lot less of a bat than we have gone before. But I mean, with 400 plus wickets, and I think...
We had to stop counting at a certain point, I would have thought with him. It's a ridiculous record with the ball. Yeah, 36-5 wicket hauls.
Wow.
He actually has more 5 wicket hauls than 4 wicket hauls.
That's crazy. So,
what is 36 times 5?
I can't do math.
A high number. Hadley, I think Hadley, Imran, Kapil and Botham were playing in tandem, it was like popular opinion that Hadley was the best bowler out of those guys. And he does have the most wickets out of those guys. And his average is also 22.29, which is ridiculously low. And a batting average of 27 also is good enough. He has over 3,100 runs. So
Yeah.
I'd say good enough pick.
I have him a lot lower. And it's because I don't think he was particularly good bat. So he made two test hundreds. And I don't know if you guys know, but one of those was when West Indies actually essentially gave him 100. So there was a game where they thought the umpires were cheating. And so they just stopped trying. So one of his, and I think Hadley's admitted this as well. I do think in first class cricket, Hadley probably showed, I think Hadley probably showed that he could have been a slightly better batter if he needed to be. It's the all-round part of this. I think there are more all-round cricketers. Whether there are better cricketers than Hadley is a different thing. Hadley was a one-man bowling attack. So when you say his bowling average is, what would you say it was, 22.29?
Yes.
You've got to remember that he's bowling as a seamer. He's basically Murali, but a seamer. So he's bowling way too many overs. And if you're a spinner, that's okay because, you know, but if you're a seamer, you really shouldn't be doing what he did. I've no problem with his talent as a player. I think he's very underestimated as a bowler, especially that because the generation after him, there's a couple of seamers who came through with better bowling averages. You know, that sort of Glenn McGrath, Curtly Ambrose came on right on the back of Hadley. So I do think he's kind of slept on. But his batting, I think his batting is probably more handy. Like, I'm not sure how much of a better bat he is than... I'm trying to think of someone in modern cricket of like... I don't know how much of a better bat he is than someone like Ashwin, right? He's probably Ashwin-level batting.
Okay.
And Ashwin might come up on this list as well, of course.
I mean, no there problem are 15 with. People.
Yeah, but do you see what I'm saying? I think it's a tough one, but it depends on how you go. Because I remember Kartikeya once saying, he wrote an article once or did a tweet once that said, you could make an argument that Shane Warne's the greatest all-rounder of all time. Right. And Shane Warne averaged like 18 with the bat, but it was a solid 18 plus he was Shane Warne. So there is, I could see how you would go with that. I didn't have him that high. How did you have him a little bit lower as well, Bayram?
He was lower than Beefy.
Okay. Interesting. Yeah. Well, okay. Well, I don't think it was a bad pick, but it's a real shame there was no Sri Lankan players we could slip into there.
They're going to be some really pissed off New Zealand fans watching this podcast now. But does anyone have more wickets than Hadley's 431 for New Zealand? Did anyone overtake him ever? Vittori, Bolt? No, not Bolt.
No, I don't think anyone has.
I
don't think New Zealand fans need to. I think he's, if you were doing the best test seam bowlers of all time, he's like really high up on that list. But I think his batting is, I think him and Kapil Dev's batting is maybe a little bit more on reputation than on consistent runs. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, that's fair. I'm very happy that my guy has survived because this was my second pick and I've gotten him. No one picked him. Ravindra Jadeja is pick number two.
Whoa.
Yeah. Average of 36 with the bat, bowling average of 24. So that's an average differential of 12. And he has played 72 test matches with 294 wickets and over 3,000 runs. I just feel like with the bat, Jadeja is very, very clutch and he scores important runs for India. And he is arguably the best fielder in contemporary cricket as well. So that also comes in all-round ability, the three-dimensional aspect of it. And, you know, he has a triple hundred in first-class cricket, let's not forget. And with the ball, if it's Asian conditions or you know, anything outside of Senna perhaps, Jadeja is just brilliant. He is on the money. And even in Senna, he has those odd bowling innings in which he runs through batting orders. So I know it's a bit of a hot take, but I've got an Indian and Pakistani over here, so I'm going to win this now.
How high did you have him, Estelle?
I didn't have him even in my top 10, I think.
I actually had him, really interestingly, right next to Hadley.
Ooh.
So, you've certainly gone early, I think, on that. From my perspective, I think it's kind of too early. If he keeps batting at the level he's batting for another 3 years, and I don't think there's any issue with his bowling, then he probably has a legitimate claim to be top five. I don't know if he has a legitimate claim to be top five right now, just because there's so many other great players out there. But he's, you know, he's putting together an incredible case, and I have no issue with him overall. being on this list. I think it's maybe a little bit too high. So, but he's going to go down as one of the greatest of all-rounders of all time. And if he retired today, he'd still be in that. He'd be in the top 10 of many people's lists, except for Estelle's.
Let me make it. Oh, there you go.
No, actually,
let me make it interesting for you guys, though. If you had to pick one of Jadeja or Kapil, who would you go for? Because I went for Jadeja. I asked myself that question, and I said Jadeja.
I had Kapil Dev one spot ahead of Jadeja in my depth chart.
Okay, fair enough. I just think the fielding aspect does propel him a bit over here. Like,
Did you see Kapil Dev field?
No.
I mean,
I didn't see
Kapil Dev was a pretty good fielder for his era too. That's, I mean, we're looking at it so far. Who've we got on the list? You would say that the only one, maybe Hadley and Callis, are very good athletes, but in slightly different ways. But Imran, Sobers, Jadeja, and my next pick are world-class athletes that probably could have played in any sport. And you're going to see that coming up again and again on this list.
Your next pick, by the way. I can smell it.
Is that because you saw me put it in the graph already when I accidentally started to write it?
I was looking at all-rounders and I saw a prehistoric one and I was like, oh, of course Jared is going to pick this one. So I'm not even going to bother. It's definitely that one.
Oh, no, it's not him. He's further down.
My
next pick is Keith Miller.
So that's what I meant. I'm sorry if my prehistoric is not as prehistoric for you.
No, I have more prehistoric guys. I have two other prehistoric guys to come. So Keith Miller, for those who don't know, he's got a very similar record to what you just said for Jadeja. I think he averages around 36, 37 with a bat.
Yes.
But he averages, what, 20?
23 with the ball. 37 with the bat. And he also has 170 wickets in 55 test matches, which is, you know, amazing.
So the thing with Keith Miller is that he opened the bowling and he batted at number four. And there really isn't another player on this list who I think you would do that with outside of Sobers. And I think his batting record, he was an incredibly lazy batter and like famously lazy. So he would go out. It's funny, I just did an interview with Barry Richards and Barry Richards said to me, I could have averaged 70. It's just that I would get to 50. And if the opposition weren't any good, I'd just get bored and hit one straight up in the air. Keith Miller was really famous for that. Like Bradman would go nuts because Miller would come out to bat with like 300 on the board and Miller would look at the scoreboard and go, like, oh, well, I'm just going to slog a couple, see how we go. And so his batting impact doesn't look as good. But if you think that he was batting, you know, sometimes behind Bradman, sometimes ahead of Neil Harvey in the order, how much they thought of him as a player. And he averaged 37. So we're not talking about someone who made no runs. I think you have to put that in. Also, again, and we're talking about all-time level athletes here. He played professional Aussie rules football. When he was young, he was short, so he was a professional jockey as well. He pretty much could have played any sport that he wanted to. You know, I think the stories about him flying jets in World War II maybe wouldn't always pass the fact-checking stage, but he was certainly, you know, heavily involved in that. And he probably missed 3 or 4 years of his early prime when he was a fast bowler because of World War II, or maybe even longer than that. So we maybe didn't even see the best of Keith Miller, and yet still he was good enough to bat at number four or number five for Australia and open the bowling. And he was a great opening. He would have been a great opening bowler regardless of all of that. Just such a smart cricketer, obviously brilliant in the field as well. Everyone who played under him said he would have been a great captain, but he was, you know, involved in extracurricular activities that didn't always please people. There's obviously many stories of him shagging members of the royal family and all that sort of stuff. Like, he lived a life, this dude, right? I think for me, I think he was automatic. In our family, I always said in Australia, there were like two kinds of families. There were Bradman families and Keith Miller families. And we were a Keith Miller family, so that could be a very Kimber biased pick. But he's the player that you wanted to go and see, and Bradman was the player that you had to go and see in that era. So, yeah, I've got no qualms about taking him in the top six.
I've got one question. I was looking at his record, and the average differential for him is also amazing. But the runs are less than 3,000. How did he average? Yeah. So was he also a not-out merchant then?
No, I don't think he. I don't think he was not out all that much. I mean, he batted so far up the order. Like he batted first drop 11 times and second drop 17 times. When he batted at number five, so at number five is probably where he should have batted, right? Like, if I'm trying to think of who he would be compared to, like almost like a Clive Lloyd type of player, where you could just, you put him in at number five, and if your top order have got any runs, good luck. And if your top order don't have any runs, you're now going to have to deal with someone who's hitting the ball really, really hard. But at number five, which is probably where he should have batted, he scored 2,000 runs and an average of 42. So he only had 7 not outs in his entire career. So, and it's just because he batted too high. But they batted too high because they thought he was so damn good. You know, and his strike rate, I think, has to be a part of it. And the fear factor of going up against Miller, you kind of knew he was going to whack you at any stage. So, yeah, absolutely fantastic cricket. Also, you know, one of the better looking cricketers of all time.
Oh, yeah. I saw that.
So let's just, let's not pretend. We talked all round. Sometimes you have to talk about that. Terrible dad, by the way. There's a whole documentary about how bad a dad he was. I know that's weird, but there is. Okay. So I now need to make a very big decision between Ian Botham and Kapil Dev. Because what you... I'm going to go Kapil Dev.
Interesting.
No, I'm going to go Ian Botham. Okay. I'm going to go Ian Botham because I think, again... that Ian Botham was at least slightly more all-round cricketer. That's not a slight on his physique, but I think he was the slightly more all-round cricketer in that I think if there's another world, I think if Botham was just a batter, he probably would have been a dashing number four who would have averaged low 40s. And I think there's another world where he could have been the sort of canny chaos bowler who still took tons of wickets even if he couldn't bat at all. And I don't think Kapil Dev is in your top six, even if he specializes as a batter. He's probably still a great number seven rather than number six. So I think that both of them was more all around. The issue I have is I really respect Kapil Dev playing such a long career and being a professional in an era that wasn't all that professional, whereas both of them let it all go away. And really, both of them probably has a higher ceiling than Kapil Dev, but a lower floor. So I don't like rewarding someone who spent a lot of his life taking the piss, right? literally, in his case, drinking a lot of piss. But also, I think for our generation, we have the footage of Botham looking bloated in 1992 World Cup that we all remember. But Botham was also a professional in two different sports, so another incredible next-level athlete. And I know for a fact that he has a terrible record bowling in the fourth innings and batting in the fourth innings because he would go out and party all the way through test. If you still manage with a really good record despite that, I think he probably is a better all-round cricketer than Kapil Dev. But you could see, you could persuade me either direction on that one.
I mean, back in the day when test matches had rest days, we know what Ian Botham used to do, right? That's why he has that fourth innings record with both bat and ball. But
I don't even think he waited for the rest days, mate, if we're being honest. I think he was doing it all the way through. I mean, that early part of his career is probably as great as an all-rounder has ever been in a 20 test sample. I don't think anyone's ever been better than Botham at that early part of his career, but he wasn't always that level of player.
Hi, I'm Cyndi Lauper. My scalp was covered with psoriasis, which could lead to psoriatic arthritis, but Cosentyx treats both.
Cosentyx secukinumab is prescribed for adults with moderate to severe plaque psoriasis 300 milligram dose and adults with active psoriatic arthritis 150 milligram dose. Don't use if you're allergic to Cosentyx. Before starting, get checked for TB. Serious allergic reactions, severe skin reactions that look like eczema, and an increased risk of infections, some fatal, have occurred. Cosentyx may lower ability to fight infections, so tell your doctor if you have an infection or symptoms like fevers, sweats, chills, muscle aches, or cough, had a vaccine or plan to, or if IBD symptoms develop or worsen. Learn more at Cosentyx.com or 1-844-COSENTYX.
Cosentyx works for me.
Ask your doctor about Cosentyx.
I won't let my active psoriatic arthritis joint symptoms define me.
Emerge as you, Tremfya, guselkumab, is proven to significantly reduce joint pain, stiffness, and swelling in adults with active psoriatic arthritis. Some patients even reported less fatigue, as assessed by survey 1 week prior. Results may vary. Tremfya is taken by injection 6 times a year after 2 starter doses at week 0 and 4.
Serious allergic reactions may occur. Tremfya may increase your risk of infections and lower your ability to fight them. Before treatment, your doctor should check you for infections and tuberculosis. Tell your doctor if you have an infection or symptoms of infection, including fever, sweats, chills, muscle aches, or cough. Tell your doctor if you had a vaccine or plan to.
Emerge as you. Learn more about Tremfya, including important safety information, at Tremfya.com or call 1-877-578-3527. See our ad in Food & Wine magazine. For patients prescribed Tremfya, cost support may be available.
I mean, I watched a documentary on him once, and obviously he's that in-your-face kind of cricketer who really wants to win and everything, but still managed to play 102 test matches, even if he had high peaks and really low troughs, right? Like, at his worst, he was pretty bad. But at his best, he was probably the best English all-rounder we've ever seen. And you've got 383 wickets there and 5,200 runs. So, I mean, if you had picked Kapil, he was sure shot going to be my next pick. Like, I wasn't going to think twice.
Well, that's only because you are currently sucking up to the two biggest cricket markets.
Well, I'm going to piss one off right now because now that you have picked Beefy, my next pick is not Kapil. Yeah, it's not. And I'm going to go, and this is a hot take, but I'm going to go Ben Stokes. And there are reasons for that, because I feel like Ben Stokes might be the most clutch cricketer of all time. And I mean, a batting average of 35 plus and a bowling average of 32 in 102 tests as well. For Stokes' skill set, someone who is an impact player, right? He will rescue an innings from turmoil and he will come and get you a wicket as a partnership breaker and kind of give you, you know, he'll bowl you some bounces and all that. Sure, he hasn't bowled in a bit, but he's working on getting back there and he has 198 wickets to show for and over 6,300 runs. And Stokes, the captain, made my captain's list in our Test Captains podcast as well. So I know people are, you know, out with their pitchforks versus Bazball, but there's a lot of good stuff that Bazball has given us. The funky feels and the reverse sweeps and all of that fun stuff, right? The scoring rates. So I feel like he is someone who has revolutionized the game. And if I talk about the clutch factor, you think of Headingley, you think of a couple of innings in these most recent men's Ashes. And you also think of the ODI and T20 World Cup knocks, right? So I think that he is, in modern day cricket, every captain's dream. And if he's captain himself, he's his own dream, I suppose. But to like, if I have to pay money to watch someone play, Ben Stokes is really, really high on that list. Because this is, and I am a sucker for left-handers. That's a thing with me. So the way he whacks the ball, he does have the fastest 200 in cricket or test cricket ever as well. I think it was Cape Town or Joburg, but I watched that innings live and that was one hell of a knock. And that's where he kind of announced himself as well as a bat, I feel. So belligerence personified, clutch factor, can play the long game as well. And with the ball, he can give you impact and quick wickets whenever he comes on and he can hurry the batters. So yeah, many of our viewers and maybe you guys as well will disagree, but I really wanted Stokes in my five.
Yeah, that's a lot higher than I had him. But I had him on my overall list. But so I was at the game in Perth. I think Perth is the first game. The Wacker game is when he comes out.
Yeah.
And you realize that he was next level player. And they were out of that game and he gave them a chance. And we were doing, must have been polite inquiries. I don't think I was with Sam at that stage. Yeah, must have been polite inquiries. And as a joke, like someone said, you know, can England win it? And I said, the only way they can win it is if Stokes becomes Sobers. And Kempo put a highlight out, is Stokes the next Sobers? And the internet just melted. It wasn't even what I'd said. The interesting thing is he's actually gone on to be a very great all-rounder. Maybe it's a bit of a reach taking him at this point. I think the thing with Stokes that you've got to remember is that him and Neil Wagner had the best records when it came to bowling to set batters. And that doesn't come through in standards statistics. But that's a thing that shows you. My big thing with Stokes is I don't think he's good enough to be a fourth bowler. But he might be one of the best fifth bowlers of all time. And so it's a little bit like Kapil Devin being a number seven, right? Mm. Or you can put, you know, Jadeja as well, maybe would be in that sort of class. So I think that's really quite kind of interesting. But where was he on your list, Estelle?
Yeah, I had him in my top 10 as well. I don't hate that pick, actually. I think on ability, he's probably really high up there, right? Like, having a bat like him in a team, anyone would want to have that kind of power and that kind of, like you mentioned, the performance under pressure is massive, right? And then the bowling is where we might kind of think, like Jared mentioned, not quite that bowler like we've mentioned about the others. But I don't hate that choice. I think fans who are not looking at like the older players definitely would have picked him maybe even higher, because he's just the guy we've seen a lot, right? We've seen a lot of what he's done, and you tend to get that bit of bias when it comes to English and Australian players in particular, because they perform in the Ashes and everyone watches it. And but I don't hate
we
that
have
choice.
To say that as much as possible just to annoy Jonathan Agnew.
But also, let's factor in the fact that he is a terrific athlete, one of the best fielders around as well. Yeah. And also, someone who's seen the lows in life, conceded four sixes versus Brathwaite, and then had that bar brawl, right? And he came back after that. So and not just came back, he became the biggest highlight in English cricket. So I think that, you know, is a testament to his character. He's a fighter.
Mm. No, I have no issue with him being on. I had him picked for later. I figured one of you would go earlier because you have less prehistoric people.
Yeah, well, Estelle, now you have two picks. So let's see if she takes Kapil Dev or not.
Yeah, so I'm going to go with Kapil Dev. I think I would have had him ahead of probably Jadeja and Ben Stokes. I think just the longevity is one big thing during that era that he was able to keep going for as long. But I don't know how far this is true, but my dad tells me that they just kept him bowling until he
I looked into that the other day because I can't remember why, but someone brought that up with me about the two things that is talked about a lot is that Kapil Dev was bowled into the ground when they traveled. And I looked it up, and he bowled 40 overs a game. And there have been bowlers who've bowled 40 and 41 overs a game. So, like, I think Richard Hadlee consistently bowled 41 overs a game. So, if Kapil Dev had to bowl more overs when he was away, but not as many overs at home, I'm not sure how that works. And the second one is this whole idea of that they bowled him right until the end. I think it's a very, very, like, end of his career thing. Because if you look in 1993, he plays 8 matches and takes 15 wickets at 27. And 1994, he plays 4 matches and takes 9 wickets at 27. The thing you'll notice there is that there aren't a lot of wickets per game. So those last 2 years, they probably carried him a little bit extra. But he's still taking his wickets at 26 and 27, right? So I think that is overblown. But you were talking about, like, if you have a player that's that good of an all-rounder, of course you're going to keep them for a little bit longer. Callis played on, right, when his batting and his bowling was almost done and his batting wasn't the same because it's Callis. Like, so I do think there is an element that they kind of push it on a little bit more of I don't think the truth is quite the same as a reputation when it comes to the Kapil Dev in that way. But I'm glad he's finally on the list after Bayram decided to annoy all of India.
I mean, I had him below Jadeja, Beefy and Stokes because I just feel like he's a bit of a numbers cricketer, right? Like Stuart Broad is. He played 131 tests and ended up with just a few more runs than Ian Botham did in 102. So when I was looking at his batting, I was like, oh, he scored Botham's runs, but in 29 more test matches. And sure, 434 wickets is great. But again, 131 tests is also a bit of a stretch and his average differential was less than 2. You know, batting average of 31.05 and bowling average of 29.64. And maybe you guys are right. A lot of this has to do with the fact that he continued for longer than he probably should have. But, you know, I don't know. I didn't feel it.
I'll make the case for Kapil Dev because I almost went with him ahead of both of them, right? So I have him very, very high, obviously. He was an Indian seam bowler in an era that had never existed before.
True.
And he was a great Indian seam bowler. you know, he would still probably get into the side now, despite the fact that they have fantastic players just because of the skills that he has. He didn't cash in when he went away from home. So it's not like he averaged 40 when he was in India and then 20 everywhere else. His average was fairly level all the way through. And on his batting, it's funny that you call him a numbers cricketer because he's kind of the opposite. His batting was really impact and you had to see it. So, for instance, he averages 31. So it's not that much more than Richard Hadley, right? Well, yeah. 4 runs more than Richard Hadley. But he had 800s, right? And the thing with Kapil Dev that you didn't get with Hadley was if you got to Kapil Dev, he could ruin your test match with the bat. So I think he was a very steady bowler. Like he was very similar to Hadley, just not as good, but a very similar kind of bowler to Richard Hadley. But with the bat, he had that ability to really change things. And I don't know if we've had many players. I'm trying to think of a modern player with the ability to average 20. Like it would be like if Mitchell Starc could make 100 every, you know, 10 test matches or something, right? Like that's the kind of player that Kapil Dev could be. So, and then you'd put his fielding in there. I think he's a fantastic player. I still think Jadeja can go past him. So Bayram's pick is probably not terrible from that point of view. But if you were asking me which one you would pick for India, I'd pick Kapil Dev all the time because they had never had anything like Kapil Dev before. And it's so hard to find seam bowling all arounders, especially in Asia, that I think that's the reason to go with Kapil Dev over Jadeja. If in an 11, but look, he's a fantastic and a brilliant athlete again. Like, you know, the last, you know, what are we up to? 9 players on this list. There's some incredible athletes for a sport that is not exactly known for athletes.
Yeah, I mean, I think you make a solid case when you say that India did not have that seam bowling heritage prior to Kapil Dev, and he was like that, you know, white sheep. I don't know. I don't even know why we have the term black sheep. Why are we being racist with sheep? But you get the point, right?
I think as there are not many black sheep. I think. Okay. I mean, I'm not saying we're not being racist with sheep. Don't get me started on white rhinos and black rhinos. But yeah, no, I get your point.
Yeah.
Are you up again, Estelle?
Yes. No, she's done both her picks, right?
Oh, no, she had one.
No, that's one. Yeah. Got it.
No, only one.
Don't steal mine.
I have one more too. Anger my Sri Lankan.
You did take
Shakib.
Shakib.
Brilliant.
Yeah, I mean it's hard. If I look at his differential and like his bowling record in particular in Test cricket, his average is not like up to the levels that of the guys we discussed before, right? It's in the 30s, but I think in that team, the role he plays and how important he is and has been for Bangladesh cricket, he is the greatest player they've ever produced, right? And for so long, he's been their best batter and best bowler. So tough to look past him. I think he is in every game, in any format that he plays, he's the guy who you want to get out first and he's the guy who you're kind of nervous about when he comes on.
He was definitely my next pick as well. And if you look at his batting average, nearly 39, bowling average of 31.16. He's played 67 tests, which I feel is unfair. Bangladesh could have, you know, played more tests and he could have reached 100 test matches and his 237 wickets maybe could have been 350. And his, you know, he's got over 4,500 runs. They could have been like 6,000 or something. I think it is an injustice that a cricketer of Shakib's caliber has only played 67 test matches. But yeah, I mean, he was definitely, you know, in this conversation, he is. And he is the best cricketer Bangladesh has ever produced. And the impact that he's had on Bangladeshi cricket is also immense.
There aren't many players on this list that are the best batter and the best bowler in their team.
Yeah.
Right. And I think he's probably the first one that we would have on this list. There's another one that might come up later, but there aren't many. And, you know, that on its own. But just I just want to go to his away record, right? Because I think we think of him as this Bangladesh specialist player, right? But his batting record away from home, he averages 37. So that's the same as Stokes' overall mark, right? And that's just away. And then if you look at his bowling, he averages 31.7 away from home. So he has better numbers away from home than Stokes does in his career. And it's not just about numbers, but I think people think of him as this guy who slides the ball under the bat in Bangladesh. And he's not. Now, he has issues you know, on his issues, some of which I like, some of which I hate. Yeah. He's probably one of the first players on this list that is not a particularly great athlete. He's a skill-based all-rounder, rather, which I really respect because, you know, if you're blessed with Sobers or Botham or Miller or Kapeldev's athleticism, you know, you've got a big advantage. Shakib's not a brilliant, you know, athlete on that sort of level. So I think it's a quite an interesting one from that point of view. But yes, I think he definitely deserves to be on here. I had him just under Hadley. Right. So I think this is almost the ideal place for him to go. The big question with him is, has he been tested enough? Just because he almost never, like, he's played six tests in South Africa, two in the UK, and four in Australia and New Zealand. I think that's right. But his numbers in those countries when he's been there is really good. He averages 40 in Australia and New Zealand, which is probably slightly under par. In the two tests in England, he averaged 35. In South Africa, he averaged 26. And in the West Indies, he averages 22 or 23, sorry. So when you look at that, you do start to go, well, wait a minute, he is actually a fairly good cricketer overall. I would love to have seen him tried more. I think it's easier to be an all-round. No, this is the wrong way of putting it. It's easier to stand out as an all-rounder when you're in a team that is not particularly good because, you know, I think his perfect use would be batting at number six and being the second main spinner in a team. Whereas for a lot of those times, he's been the main spinner and he's had to bat at number, you know, what, three, four, five and everywhere else. And there's a great player called John R. Reid who won't make our list from New Zealand. I think exactly the same thing. It's just you're using them out of position because they could do everything, right? And so I think that has held him back a little bit. And I would love to see him tested more in more places. But when he has gone to those places, he looks fine to me.
Hi, I'm Cyndi Lauper. My scalp was covered with psoriasis. Felt like I was trapped between a rock and a hard place. Then I started Cosentyx.
Cosentyx secukinumab is prescribed for adults with moderate to severe plaque psoriasis 300 milligram dose. Don't use if you're allergic to Cosentyx. Before starting, get checked for TB, serious allergic reactions, severe skin reactions that look like eczema, and an increased risk of infections, some fatal, have occurred. Cosentyx may lower ability to fight infections, so tell your doctor if you have an infection or symptoms like fevers, sweats, chills, muscle aches, or cough, had a vaccine or plan to, or if IBD symptoms develop or worsen. Learn more at Cosentyx.com or 1-844-COSENTYX.
Cosentyx works for me.
Ask your doctor about Cosentyx.
I won't let my active psoriatic arthritis joint symptoms define me.
Emerge as you. Tremfya guselkumab is proven to significantly reduce joint pain, stiffness, and swelling in adults with active psoriatic arthritis. Some patients even reported less fatigue as assessed by survey 1 week prior. Results may vary. Tremfya is taken by injection 6 times a year after 2 starter doses at week 0 and 4.
Serious allergic reactions may occur. Tremfya may increase your risk of infections and lower your ability to fight them. Before treatment, your doctor should check you for infections and tuberculosis. Tell your doctor if you have an infection or symptoms of infection, including fever, sweats, chills, muscle aches, or cough. Tell your doctor if you had a vaccine or plan to.
Emerge as you. Learn more about Tremfya, including important safety information, at Tremfya.com or call 1-877-578-3527. See our ad in Food & Wine magazine. For patients prescribed Tremfya, cost support may be available.
Yeah, I think you make a fantastic point about him having to do more in Bangladesh as opposed to what he would have had to do in a team which had, you know, more pedigree. And I am a little upset that Shakib is gone because he was going to be my next pick. But this one also might surprise some people because the numbers can be deceiving. But I'm going to go with another Englishman. I'm going to go Andrew Flintoff. And Freddie's numbers, he has a negative average differential, actually. 31.77 is his average with the bat, and his bowling average is 32.78. But he's played 79 test matches, and he also was someone who could just, you know, capture the moment. When I think of Freddie Flintoff, I think of those two Ashes series, 2005 and 2009. And I was absolutely hooked to test cricket in that 2005 Ashes. I was, 11 years of age, and it was already my favorite sport, and I'd have to thank Freddie Flintoff for that. You know, a very belligerent batter, someone who will, or for his era, even more belligerent if you think about it, right? Because he would just come out and smash it, And he also, with the ball, when he was fully fit, he could really crank it up, right? He was a 90 miles per hour plus bowler, 226 wickets to his name and over 3,800 runs. And he was a mesmerizing cricketer in the sense that if you saw him play, you just remember him forever. And at the point where he was playing, he was a lot of people's favorite cricketers. And England hadn't won an Ashes series in what, 20 years or something like that? 87 to 2005. Do the math. I don't know. I'm generally good at maths, but Jared is rubbing off on me. But yeah, those two Ashes series, 2005 and 2009. And 2009 was his last one because his body had given up. But I think his ceiling was really, really high. And if you look at just his skills and his talent, he could have been the best all-rounder of all time. But unfortunately, things didn't go that direction. I'm content picking him at my number four spot.
Did you have him on your list, Estelle?
Yeah, but I had him like if I run out of picks. But I think when you think of a genuine all-rounder, he's definitely a name that comes up, right? But his numbers don't quite kind of live up to that.
He had a couple of years.
But otherwise...
Yeah, he had a couple of years where he was... Well, he had like a couple of Botham years, but then he had a bunch of, you know, not Botham years, right? and so I think that plays a part. I can tell you why his bowling average isn't better. And this actually strengthens your case, Bayram. His bowling average isn't better because he never took any wickets of tail-enders. He was dreadful against tail-enders. He was one of the world's best bowlers against top-order batters.
Ooh.
All right? And against tail-enders, he couldn't go through them. And that's where you pick up, that's where you make your average better, right? Like, it's hard to get top order players out. And if you can work out how to get tail enders out, your overall average just drops massively because you can get tail enders out an average of 15 and top order players usually get out an average of 40, right? Whereas he did really well against a top order player and never did anything against the tail. And that is essentially what costs him what should have been a bowling average of 26, 27, because I watched him all the way through his career. He was... he was a great bowler and his numbers do not even, in England great, not an all-time great, but his batting is, he just basically got it together for a couple of years, right? And he was clearly a lot better than that. Maybe didn't always take cricket as seriously as he has reality TV. if he'd been as professional a player as he was a TV host and everything else, he's way higher up on this list, if we're being honest. But it just took him a long time for all those things to come together. Thoughts go out to him as well. Obviously, he's having to deal with his issues from being on a reality TV show and handling that. But yeah, I think he's one of those players who, like, you've gone, it's really interesting. You've gone with Stokes and Flintoff. Those are both not numbers guys. Those are both impact guys. And that is the other big part of being an all-rounder, right? Like, it's very rare to find the players with the great numbers, but what you also want is the players who can just make an impact on either side of the ball at any stage. And I think those two completely fit into that.
He's got those magic moments, right? You think of that spell to Jacques Callis and the way he worked over a punter in the Ashes. And then when he went down to console Brett Lee, or maybe he was having a different kind of word with him. Who knows? We'll never know. But it seemed like he was consoling him. He was just a terrific athlete. And I think you make a very fantastic point when you say that at that point in his career, had he focused on cricket more, maybe he could have done more with his career. But overall, he was one of my favorite cricketers to watch in that era. And maybe a talent unfulfilled, but... He would definitely. I would have been very disappointed if he didn't make this top 15 of our combined all-rounders list.
Yeah, no, I think that's very fair. Okay, time for a prehistoric pick.
I've got another guess. Let's see if I'm right.
You can guess. I reckon you can get this. So I'm going to allow you to give me my pick because I'm pretty sure.
Is it related to Ashwin or something that Ashwin does? Something that Ashwin has made mainstream.
No.
Oh, okay, then I don't.
No, he. That person is on my list, but a bit further down. No, this is Aubrey Faulkner.
Okay.
So Aubrey Faulkner is the only player in Test cricket to average more than 40 with the bat and less than 30 with the ball. He didn't play a lot of tests. The reason he didn't play a lot of tests is because World War I happened in the middle of his career, and he almost died during World War I. He actually fought in two different wars. He fought in the Boer War, and it's like, no, well, that's not enough. Then he went off and fought in World War I as well. And when he got very sick in World War I, so when he came back, he probably should have been able to play a couple more years and didn't. But he did actually make a comeback when he was when I say late 30s, early 40s, and he should not have been playing international cricket at that point. But he still managed to get through. But Aubrey Faulkner at his absolute best, I would say he was probably in the top three or four best batters in the world. You had Hobbs, you had Trumper, you had Clem Hill. And I think you could put Aubrey Faulkner as the fourth one, or certainly in that top five of that period. And in English conditions and South African conditions, he was almost unplayable. So he's one of the first players to use the wrong-un, obviously, you know, taken from Bosie and using that. And I think his best figures are something like 6 for 15 against South Africa. Like when he got it right, no one hit him. And the other interesting thing about him is he was a brilliant batter in Australia and a brilliant bowler in South Africa and England. And he didn't play that much cricket. So I actually think he would have developed into an even more all-round player if he'd played more cricket. And he started as a batter, learnt leg spin, and then became a bowler. He was probably one of the early great coaches as well. So he's not remembered now. And I think it's very sad because of how brilliant he was. But he doesn't play a lot of games. But there's a great story about him. I want to say he was 41 and a touring Australian team went up against him. And he didn't want to play in this game. It was like a tour match. He didn't want to be involved, but the people running the tour were like, we need Aubrey Faulkner to come to play against the Australians. And it was a great Australian team. And this sort of overweight guy comes out to bat. And Aubrey Faulkner would talk to himself when he was batting, right? And he's mumbling to himself. And the Australians are like, looking, going, what is this? Why have you brought out this old guy? And he smashed them absolutely everywhere, made 100. And they were all like, this is one of the best cricketers we've ever seen. And they didn't even know who he was. And they were just the generation after him, which tells you how quickly he disappeared, because South African cricketers of that era just weren't talked about all that much. Mm. But yeah, definitely, like, I think, and on a list like this, always should be mentioned, because we didn't even see his best. And his second best is still averaging over 40 with the bat and under 30 with the ball. I think if he played more, his bowling average would have probably ended up around 30, but I think his batting average could have gone up to 45. So he still would have had the great differential that Bayram loves. but, you know, obviously a tragic player, took his own life. And, you know, if you've ever, if you're interested in him, I've written like a 12,000 word piece on him once, because I do think it's an incredible life that not enough people in cricket know about. But yeah, just he was automatic on my list. I was just hoping that neither of you had done enough research to steal him.
Would you say that he is the best leg spin bowling all-rounder of all time? I mean, there's Shane Warne.
That's where you, I suppose. So we haven't talked about Richie Beno on this as well. So Richie Beno's second part of his career is absolutely fantastic as well. I suppose it depends on where you have them. But yeah, I would say Aubrey Faulkner. Yeah, because Aubrey Faulkner wasn't quite the level of bowler that Warne or Richie Beno was, but he was double their batting. So, yeah. You know, you're talking about a guy who made a double 100 in Australia, right? Like a proper batter. And in an era when, it's all worth remembering, he was the Shakib Al Hassan of South Africa. Right? Like he was their best batter and their best bowler at the same time. So they were a really ordinary team, and he helped them win entire series with bat and with ball. So he was fantastic. All right. So I've done him.
This is your last pick.
Yeah. So I was hoping that you would both sleep on Shakib or that Estelle wouldn't pick him because she's South Africa. She's Sri Lankan and that, like, you know, it's also can't wait for the comments on this one. Vinu Mankad is, I mean, you've already let the name out of the bag. I think he's on my long list. I don't think I can get him in here. There's two English all-rounders and two South African all-rounders, but one played for England. And then another prehistoric pick.
I think the South African who played for England has a very solid case.
Yeah, I'm just trying to work out whether I go him or the player who played for Test cricket in 31 years. I'm going to go Tony Greig, because I think that if Tony Greig had played more cricket for England, we would remember him more. And because he left for Packer and then never came back. But for those who don't know about Tony Greig, the cricketer, he averaged 40 with the bat and he averaged 32 with the ball. He was a good handy second, you know, he was a proper fifth bowler, but a good fifth bowler. And in first class cricket, he took 856 wickets at 28.
Wow.
And he actually batted a lot better in test cricket. I think it helped. I think in county cricket, he struggled a little bit with the ball coming on slower, whereas he actually preferred the ball to come on a little bit quicker. But he was a fantastic cricketer. And, you know, we might all have issues with the commentary, and a lot of people had issues with the whole World Series cricket and everything else and the grovel. And
yeah,
you can go down the line of all the things that Tony Gregg has done. But if you can average 40 with the bat and 32 with the ball over a long period of time, I think we know what level of a cricketer he was. Mm-hmm. And I think that has him above some of the other players who we'll mention when you guys finish your list.
Yeah, I mean, 58 tests to add, right? So it's not a short career. 141 wickets, nearly 3,600 runs. And is he the tallest guy on our list?
Oh, I would say he would be, yeah. Yeah, I think you're right. I think you're right. What would he be? 6'5"? I know I've met him. I mean, he was massive. I would have said he was about 6'5", 6'6"?
We recently did a Footmarks on the piece that you guys co-wrote, in which you mentioned how he might be the most rebellious cricketer of all time since he was part of World Series cricket and also, you know, part of the ICL or in the administration of the Indian Cricket League. And then
and left the apartheid to go and yes, play cricket in England. I mean, he did everything.
And played the second ODI ever at a time where ODIs were looked upon as a gimmick. And also the whole grovel thing kind of adds to that, I suppose. But yeah, I mean, he was going to be my next pick. But you know what? I wanted you to take him because I feel like you can do more justice talking about him.
I mean, I'm glad to have done that. It'd be interesting to see what your next pick is.
Yeah, so I'm actually left with not a lot of people. I'll mention my long list later. But since I've gone for some impact cricketers, and on the other hand, I've looked at differentials and whatnot, I'm going to go, man, you guys are going to laugh at me, but I'm going to go Sean Pollock. And yeah, because I don't think everyone remembers how decent a bat he was. He actually averages over 32 in test cricket, but as a bowler, he has been one of South Africa's finest. Like, you probably, like, if you think of top three paces from South Africa, and let's not talk about the current guys because they're still playing, we'll see where they end up. You'd think Steyn, Pollock, Donald, right? And he's got 21 wickets, nearly 3,800 runs. And his bowling average is 23.11, which is lower than Waseem Akram's. Now, of course, he played in South Africa. That helps him. But averaging 32 with the bat for someone like Sean Pollock, who came out to bat at, what, 8, is it? Below Boucher. He has a better batting average than Boucher. There you have it, right?
Hi, I'm Cyndi Lauper. My scalp was covered with psoriasis. Felt like I was trapped between a rock and a hard place. Then I started Cosentyx.
Cosentyx secukinumab is prescribed for adults with moderate to severe plaque psoriasis 300 milligram dose. Don't use if you're allergic to Cosentyx. Before starting, get checked for TB. Serious allergic reactions, severe skin reactions that look like eczema, and an increased risk of infections, some fatal, have occurred. Cosentyx may lower ability to fight infections, so tell your doctor if you have an infection or symptoms like fevers, sweats, chills, muscle aches, or cough, had a vaccine or plan to, or if IBD symptoms develop or worsen. Learn more at Cosentyx.com or 1-844-COSENTYX.
Cosentyx works for me.
Ask your doctor about Cosentyx.
I won't let my active psoriatic arthritis joint symptoms define me.
Emerge as you. Tremfya, guselkumab, is proven to significantly reduce joint pain, stiffness, and swelling in adults with active psoriatic arthritis. Some patients even reported less fatigue, as assessed by survey 1 week prior. Results may vary. Tremfya is taken by injection 6 times a year after 2 starter doses at week 0 and 4.
Serious allergic reactions may occur. Tremfya may increase your risk of infections and lower your ability to fight them. Before treatment, your doctor should check you for infections and tuberculosis. Tell your doctor if you have an infection or symptoms of infection, including fever, sweats, chills, muscle aches, or cough. Tell your doctor if you had a vaccine or plan to.
Emerge as you. Learn more about Tremfya, including important safety information, at Tremfya.com or call 1-877-578-3527. See our ad in Food & Wine magazine. For patients prescribed Tremfya, cost support may be available.
I think, well, you know how I feel about Boucher, but I think he has the best batting average at number 8, the best batting average at number 9, and I think his dad has the best batting average at number 10 or 11 as well, and I think his uncle has the best batting average at number 3 or 4.
Yeah.
It must be 4, because Bradman would be 3, right? So,
yeah.
Yeah, so the Pollock family could all bat, even the ones that were down the order. Yeah, if he plays for a different team and there isn't Klusner and there isn't Boucher and there isn't McMillan, he probably is a great number seven, right? He probably averages 33, 34 at number seven. And we're thinking about him very, very differently. Because he batted so low, even though he had the high average, he didn't actually bat all that much, if that makes sense. He didn't make as many runs as someone else as he could have if he'd been slightly higher in the order. But he was on my long list. My big issue with him is I still think he could have been a hot take. I think he could have been in the top three. Right?
Okay.
Because when he came through, he could bowl 90 miles an hour and move the ball both ways. I think he could have ended up with a bowling average of 20. And I think if he'd taken his batting a little bit more seriously, he could have been a number seven who averaged 35 to 40. That's how good I think he could have been. And I remember I wrote an article when he retired basically saying it was a waste because of what he could have been. And I remember talking to him about it. A lot of the bowling was his physical. Yeah, his body went really, really early. So he ends up becoming a medium fast bowler. He ends up becoming Richard Hadlee or Kapil Dev when he could have been a lot more than that. And the batting, he probably didn't take it as seriously as he could have. A little bit like someone like Keith Miller, because there were so many other batters. There were so many all-rounders in his order at all time, right? Well, isn't there a famous game where they had all 11 players with first-class hundreds in a test match? I think, so they had incredible batting depth. And so he didn't take it as seriously as he could have. But I do think his body played a big part in that. He just wasn't, he was so sore so much of his career. I do think that changed it. I didn't have him in my top 15, but also I don't think there's anything wrong with slotting him in here. I know you thought you might get some flack for that. I don't think you should get flack for that.
I mean,
you should get flack for everything else.
Is it nine, right? His difference between his batting and bowling average is nine. So that's quite a plus player. And, you mentioned how his body gave up. I became an avid cricket watcher in the early 2000s and I haven't seen Pollock bowl at 90 plus miles per hour. I've seen the other guy and he was still very, very good. In fact, we should maybe look into how many of those 421 wickets he's taken as a medium pacer. And with the bat, he was just criminally underrated. Like you mentioned, he could have batted higher as well. And it's interesting. When I looked at that record, I was a bit surprised. I thought he would have averaged like 25 or something, but 32 is quite solid.
Great. Well, right. Estelle's going to finish this. Oh, of course, Estelle was going to
pick
him.
Yeah, he would have been my... I was going to pick him last. Because like Jared mentioned, I think any other team is probably batting higher, right? But I was still surprised that the average was that high. I also expected it to be in the 20s. But just the way he got runs, he was like, when you look at his numbers and you look at the fact that he batted at eight, you probably think, a lot of that was luck and, just going after the bowling. He did hit a long ball, but I thought he could be a genuine batter as well. But obviously didn't really have to do that in that team. For my last pick, and you guys know I always mess up the last pick.
Is he your next pick?
Going with Chris Cairns. I'm going with Chris Cairns.
Yeah.
I think on the front of like being a genuine all-rounder, and that New Zealand team had a lot of them as well at that point, he would be one of the, top guys who'd come to mind, right, in the 90s, just because he was such a good bowler and could make such a big impact with both bat and ball. Just looking at his record, 5 test hundreds and 13 5-wicket hauls. So, like, in any team, he's probably...
Well, 5 test hundreds, but it's worth remembering he only played 62 matches. So he's basically getting you 100 every 10 matches. I think he underperformed with the bat because he averages, 33? I was shocked when I saw he only averaged 33 with the bat. He's a much better player than that. He should be. I don't think he should have. He's not the same kind of player as Ben Stokes, but I think he should have been averaging 35 to 37. And he had a similar kind of impact to Ben Stokes where it didn't matter what Cairns averaged, because you knew you had to get through him. And if you didn't, the game could change so quickly. Imagine what it'd be worth in T20 cricket. It's a real shame what has happened to his reputation and everything else. And, obviously we can't get into everything because of lawsuits. Mm-hmm. But, he doesn't get remembered as much in these kinds of lists. And I thought he was a really good bowler. Like, you know, he's ended up with a bowling average of better than 30. I just think he was a fantastic cricketer. And, you know, I don't know if you guys know this. The most hilarious fact is you think of Chris Cairns, you think of a swing bowler, right? And his bowling average, I think this is right. His batting average was really, really high in New Zealand. I think he averages like 37 in New Zealand. But his bowling average away is 30. Right. So it's not as if he took all of his wickets on green tops swinging it around. He actually did really, really well when he traveled away. And so his batting is a little bit, his batting is the one that was better in New Zealand, whereas bowling is almost exactly the same home and away. So look, he was one of my favorite cricketers. I've tried to do stuff with him, and I would love to sit down with him one day and have a conversation. Obviously, it is hard because of different legal stuff that we can and can't talk about. He did reach out to me at one stage, and I think he wanted me, I can't remember if he wanted me to write a book on him or do a documentary. I'm pretty sure that's right. I have to go back through my emails. And I really was trying to work out how the best way of doing it. A few players have been involved in match fixing have reached out to me after the Sri Sounds piece. And I would love to do something on Chris Cairns. I think he's had a fascinating life, and I would, you know, I can't wait to do a whole chapter on the diamond trading he definitely did not do.
Yeah, I was confused between him and Sean Pollock because it's ultimately I went for the differential, but I think that Cairns was a more all-round cricketer if you look at it, because as a batter, we often forget, like we always talk about who hits a long ball. We don't talk as much about who hits a high ball. His sixes were towering. They were like going into orbit, right? That's the sort of cricketer he was. And he ended up with, what, 218 wickets in 62 test matches with over 3,300 runs. I think it's a very solid last pick. And that would help Estelle's overall list as well.
I was at a one day in the 2003 World Cup. He's playing against Australia. And I think it was Glenn McGrath or Brett Lee dropped short to him. And it was at PE or... Burka, as it's called now. And he just hit the ball out of the stadium, through some trees, down a road. Like, it's still going, that ball. Like, I remember me and my mate looked at each other just to be like, is that real? Has he actually hit that ball that far? And, you know, I was there when Gale hit the ball, hit Brett Lee over the stand. So, weirdly enough, I've been at some of the biggest, more famous hits. I'm not sure I've ever seen anyone hit the ball harder than Chris Cairns did. He may not have hit it as consistently as the modern guys hit it hard, but just absolutely a great. Should we go through our lists?
Yes, let's do it.
Estelle, Callis, Hadley, Dev, Shakib, and Chris Cairns. Bayram, Imran Khan, Ravi Jadeja, Ben Stokes, Andrew Flintoff, Sean Pollock. And I have gone Garfield Sobers, Keith Miller, Ian Botham, Aubrey Faulkner, and Tony Greig. God, I've got two South Africans at the end. That's fair. That's fair. I think this is stronger. I think Jadeja's too high. And I almost think you could flip Flintoff and Pollock in your list, Bayram, as well. But other than that, and Dev's too low, I think, if we're doing an overall list. This is who I've got we missed out. Trevor Goddard. I don't know if he came up on any of the research that you both did, but Trevor Goddard averaged 35 in Test cricket with a bowling average of 26. More of a handy batter, probably almost a Vittori of his time in some ways. Vittori is another one, of course.
Vittori missed out.
Vinu Mankad was the one that Bayram thought I would go with. His numbers don't quite stack up with some of the other players. Although Vinu Mankad, I think, is another Flintoff. Like, the impact of Vinu Mankad was very big. Richie Beno, we mentioned. There's a lot of guys like Alan Davidson and Shane Warne and Mitchell Stark and Pat Cummins that kind of can bat a little bit. Like, you know, Graham Swan type players, but I'm not sure that they're quite all-rounders, but I'm sure a lot of people might have them on their list. And the other one, I don't know if either of you found this guy, but Wilfred Rhodes.
Yeah, I found him.
Yeah. So Wilfred Rhodes averaged 30 with the bat and he averaged 27 with the ball. And he did that, Estelle, over 31 years.
Wow.
So he started in 1899.
Only 100 tests though, no?
Not even that many, is it?
50,
it was like 12 tests. 58. Yeah, he didn't even play test. Remember, there was a couple of wars in the middle. There weren't that many teams to play either. So the Boer War stopped the South African tests. And then the World War I came. He almost lasted to World War II, though. He's an interesting one because he started really low in the order and ended up as a top order player. You know, so Ravi Shastri is another interesting player from that kind of, you know, that wasn't an all-rounder when they started and was an all-rounder when they finished. But yeah, those are the ones that I had that I thought were worth mentioning. And I don't know if there's anyone else. Did you guys have anyone else that we've missed?
What do you think of Wasim? I mean, his record is pretty decent, right? But he didn't come across as a good batter. But he has a double 100 also.
Yeah, he has a 257 versus Zimbabwe and Shehupura. But I think his better 100 is the one he scored versus Australia and Adelaide, right? Wasim was a bit of a slogger. And look, I had him in my long list, as did I have Vernon Philander. Big Vern was in my long list, right?
Oh, wow.
And as was Jason Holder. I don't know why you didn't mention him in your long list. Because
I don't think he's in yet, right?
Yeah, I think with Jason Holder, the problem is his peak was really good, but it was only a couple of years, right? Hmm. And now he's not going to play anymore.
Yeah.
And I would have Wasim with Alan Davidson and Pat Cummins, or not Pat Cummins, but and Mitchell Starc and Shane Warne and those sorts of guys that I think had batting talent, but probably are not actually all-rounders. You know, maybe Richie Beno is that slight level above. Richie Beno and Richard Hadley are that slight level above. But I think you can make a claim for Akram, but he made 257 not out against Zimbabwe. And how many? And you said he made the one in Australia, and he made one other 100.
Yeah.
So 104 matches for 300s. But his overall average is 22.
Probably jacked up by the 257 not out, right?
Yeah, yeah. So I that's why I think of him more. You know that. You know, Mitchell Johnson is another guy that we could add to that sort of list. Of we know they could bat, and Graham Swan could bat, right? And but whether they're all rounders, I'm not 100%. Is there anyone else we missed?
Yeah, Ashwin made my long list, but then again, same sort of argument. Yeah. Same sort of argument for him as well. On the flip side, you've spoken about a lot of bowlers who were, a lot of cricketers who were primarily bowlers and could bat a bit. There was a cricketer who was primarily a batter and could bowl a bit, Sanath Jayasuriya. So he also made my long list.
Yeah, it's just his overall record is not as great, is it, in Test cricket? I think he's very fair. I think Ashwin, a couple of years ago, would probably been in the top 15. It's just that his batting's probably slipped off a little bit. And I think you could easily, I don't think you can make a claim that he's a better all-rounder than anyone on this list. But, you know, we've got Hadley quite high. So you could have an Ashwin-Hadley type conversation where you're like, well, his batting was good enough and he was a great bowler. But then if you're going that far, that's when Warne comes back into it again and it gets a little bit more tricky. Heath Streak is another player who I thought was absolutely fantastic. Yep. And Mike Proctor obviously doesn't make it because he didn't play enough tests, but probably would have been on this list. And who was the other guy? The other guy who played at Nottingham with Clive Rice, another South African that, you know, in that kind of era would have done it. And then you've got some of the older guys too, Leary Constantine and Jimmy Sinclair. Both absolutely fantastic cricketers. Any others you've missed? We've missed, Estelle?
No, I think Wasim was Dana the Jaya one
Silva,
that I...
Chaminda Vaas.
10 years later, GDS is spearheading this.
Vaas's record is good, or decent at least, but like you can't really make the case that he was a good enough batter to make the list, right?
I think he's another of that sort of Stark, Mitchell Johnson level, right? Where... You know, we know they could bat, and Vaas could be really dangerous with a bat when he needed to be, but he's not, you're not going to bat him at number seven, you know, more than a couple of games in a row, right? And I love Vaas, and you know, I'd love to make that claim. You've also got, like, Steve Waugh, just because she hasn't made the claim. Steve Waugh actually is a fantastic all-rounder. I think if Steve Waugh plays his entire career, it would be very interesting to see what he would have ended up with, because he ends up with 92 wickets at 37. If he was a brilliant athlete, and a lot of that bowling was done when he didn't really have any hamstrings left. If he'd stayed being a brilliant athlete, I wonder what his bowling record would have been. And of course, his brother is another one who, his brother started bowling medium pace and ended up bowling spin. So they're obviously just a ridiculously athletically talented family as well. Just to go through the full list though. So you've got Imran Khan, Garfield Sobers, Jadeja, Keith Miller, Kapil Dev, Ben Stokes, Ian Botham. Maybe you could put Chris Cairns there as well. And Tony Gregg, if you want to put Hyde in. There's some freakishly athletic people on that list. And it does show you why all-rounders tend to come from, you know, there's a reason why everyone's so excited about Cameron Green, right? And it is because he's another freakish athlete that has all those sorts of skills. And in about 4 years, Bayram, we'll be able to slip Aaron Hardy in this list.
Yeah, definitely. I was going to say, how can Aaron Hardy not make it in 4 years? In a decade from now, we'll have DDS and Aaron Hardy headlining this one. But anyway, that wraps up this rather long Crick Picks episode, but I suppose it deserved that kind of time because test all-rounders is just that sort of subject, right? It's one of the most important subjects of our sport. But anyway, you guys let us know in the comments who you think won this one. And we'll be back with another episode of Crick Picks next week. That's all for now. Goodbye.
Thank you for listening. This podcast has an ad-free version via Patreon, where there are also many other extras as well, including a Discord channel where you can chat to me directly. There is a link to the Patreon in the show notes. We are an independent podcast, so support us any way you can. Maybe give us a review, subscribe, or share on social media. All of these things help us. And when it comes to podcasts, word of mouth is always the best way of making it grow. If we had a guest on, chances are their socials are in the show notes. Please support everyone who comes on this show. I am Jared Kimber, and this is my network. But we also have hosts and co-hosts like Bayram Kazi and Estelle Vasudevan. This network is overseen by Nick McCorriston, and each episode is produced by Ishit Kaburka at Sound Potion Studio. Mukunda Bandredi, or Muku as most people will know, is the head of our YouTube channels, and he also helps out with so many other things like the podcast recordings. And there's so many other people we could thank here, but I just want to thank all the listeners and all the people who help behind the scenes that make this podcast work. If you make a lot of content like me, you will need help. And that is why we use Minvo.pro, a slicing and dicing tool that uses AI to conjure up great clips from your podcast chats and meetings. If you make content, go to Minvo.pro to cut it.
I'm Cyndi Lauper. My psoriasis was all over, even on my scalp, which may mean four times the risk for psoriatic arthritis. But Cosentyx works on both.
Cosentyx secukinumab is prescribed for adults with moderate to severe plaque psoriasis 300 milligram dose and adults with active psoriatic arthritis 150 milligram dose. Don't use if you're allergic to Cosentyx. Before starting, get checked for TB. Serious allergic reactions, severe skin reactions that look like eczema, and an increased risk of infections, some fatal, have occurred. Cosentyx may lower ability to fight infections, so tell your doctor if you have an infection or symptoms like fevers, sweats, chills, muscle aches, or cough, had a vaccine or plan to, or if IBD symptoms develop or worsen. Learn more at Cosentyx.com or 1-844-COSENTYX. Ask your doctor about Cosentyx.
I won't let my active psoriatic arthritis joint symptoms define me.
Emerge as you. Tremfya guselkumab is proven to significantly reduce joint pain, stiffness, and swelling in adults with active psoriatic arthritis. Some patients even reported less fatigue as assessed by survey 1 week prior. Results may vary. Tremfya is taken by injection 6 times a year after 2 starter doses at week 0 and 4.
Serious allergic reactions may occur. Tremfya may increase your risk of infections and lower your ability to fight them. Before treatment, your doctor should check you for infections and tuberculosis. Tell your doctor if you have an infection or symptoms of infection, including fever, sweats, chills, muscle aches, or cough. Tell your doctor if you had a vaccine or plan to.
Emerge as you. Learn more about Tremfya, including important safety information, at Tremfya.com or call 1-877-578-3527. See our ad in Food & Wine magazine. For patients prescribed Tremfya, cost support may be available.